You know, we talk a lot on this show about connecting with audiences, but how often do we really understand what people are feeling? That's where Talkalytics comes in. Talkalytics is a voice-based feedback platform that doesn't just capture what people say, it analyzes how they say it. Tone, emotion, sentiment, the stuff that traditional surveys miss completely. It's like running a global focus group on demand, helping brands fine-tune their messaging, their positioning, even their product strategy. Because when you know how people feel, not just what they say, your decisions get a whole lot smarter. And here's something to think about. Emotionally connected customers spend twice as much on the brands they love. If you're ready to really listen, go to talkalytics.com/getinsights for a free demonstration. That's talkalytics.com/getinsights. Talkalytics, the truth is in the tone. Listening to AW360, a podcast from Advertising Week. Recorded live at Advertising Week Europe 2025 in London, AW360 features thought leadership conversations with the best and the brightest in the advertising, marketing, and technology communities. If you enjoy AW360, we'd appreciate it if you took the time to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, left a positive review, or shared with your friends and colleagues. Thanks for listening. You're listening to the AW360 podcast, where we're recording live from Advertising Week Europe 2025 here in 180 Studios in London. I'm joined now by Ian Milner, founder of Iris Worldwide. Ian, how you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you. Thanks for having me. You just promoted me.
Yeah, that's kind of the point here. Believe it or not, that's actually the point. If you go way back, the point really was is to have the non-event content guy, me, travel to the events, even though I had nothing to do. So I would say, you know, I know what I can make podcasts. That's what I'll do. And they were like, yeah, that's a good idea.
How hard can it be?
It's well, yeah, everybody seems to think it's very difficult. And for the purposes of this show, it's actually very difficult.
Of course, of course.
It's yeah. I mean, don't. I'm a professional.
I know. I can see.
Yeah. So welcome to the show. To start things off, tell us a bit about Iris.
So Iris, 25 years in the making, global creative business, all about creative innovation, understanding culture, world firsts. Right from the beginning, we've been all about being ahead of the market, being transformative, being an agent provocateur for clients, doing things that the big agency networks couldn't and wouldn't. And that has served us incredibly well. You know, we've managed to build a 1,000-person-strong global business that 10 years ago we sold to our biggest client, Samsung. So it's been an incredible journey. There have been lots of brilliant people involved in it. And, you know, when I look back on the 25 years, you know, we've just done some amazing stuff there. I don't even know what some of it even is. You know what I mean? It's like, what category is it? But it's just been a fantastic 25 years.
So you built it from the ground up. You left and then came back?
Built it from the ground up. Absolutely true. I think all good startups, you know, come from humble beginnings, group of people, meeting of minds, you know, you hustle and you're making it up as you're going along. And, you know, you're learning quickly around what's working and what isn't. And, you know, happen to hit on an amazing client at the time, Ericsson, Sony Ericsson, and they had 25% market share. And this is before, you know, Apple's phones were around. So we were able to scale it really, really quickly. But I've been CEO for 20 years of my 25 years. And since the end of our earnout, I've been that chairman. So I've been there in the background, hoping not to get too much in the way.
Perfect. Well, what do you think has changed the most about leading a global creative agency today versus when you just started out?
So when we started out, everything was sort of, you know, easy. You know, the business wasn't so professional, not so data-driven, not so anxious about, you know, new waves of technologies like AI. So everything was an opportunity. And obviously we were starting from a point where we had no legacy, you know, and this is before the internet was, you know, serious, you know, before digital, before social, before the creative economy. So there was just so many versions of our industry that we've kind of grown up and through over the years. But, you know, when I look back on it, I think, you know, we started up at exactly the right time, you know, where there was still joy in the industry. You know,
let's not tell anybody there's no joy, especially not here and today. You must be a big believer in entrepreneurial thinking then, I would think.
Absolutely. And as you'll know, I've had a podcast for the last 12 months called Entrepreneurs in the Wild, and I've deliberately and specifically gone out to speak to academics in the field of entrepreneurialism, serial entrepreneurs, and people that I know or have worked in across the industry that have either done startups or they've shown entrepreneurial kind of spirit in their own careers, to try to just understand it more, to codify it, to work out what can companies do to try to sort of tap into that. And is it valid? Is it valuable? Is it something that's important? And it's a topic that is really close to my heart and certainly been the red thread behind the 25 years of the Iris journey.
And for yourself, how do you take that sort of mindset and keep it in play and keep it, you know, keep fostering it as you grow? That's got to be difficult.
Things change. So I think you've got to recognize things change and recognize that what different phases mean to that growth journey. In the early days, the young people, it was about, it was an ill-formed sort of business. It was, it was very much in beta, you know, it was a series of experiments. And some of those things just took off and were amazing and brilliant, and some not so much. And I think that having that experimentation phase is really good, because you can sort of learn about yourselves, learn about your team, learn about, you know, the market and what clients are buying and what's just sort of around the corner. And then as you mature as a management team, you can carry on being entrepreneurial, but it's about taking things a bit more seriously. And that means more professional, more debt, more investment, and just taking much more of an educated sense around the risks that you're making around, you know, the sorts of things that you're getting into. Whereas in the early days, not so much calculation, not so much risk. It was just about trying things, you know, the classic kind of, you know, like breaking stuff and moving on, moving quickly. It was all about that. And again, that just in our industry, that just works really well, because I think clients like to have people around them that are like that.
Yeah.
Because in their businesses, by definition, they're just generally a bit more cautious, a bit more risk averse. They need more proof points, more data to make their decisions. And but they do need a balanced portfolio of partners. And then they need people who are there to break rules, to break category conventions, to invent things that, you know, haven't been done before, and to push them, stimulate them. And so I think, you know, when you look around our industry, it's like this sort of swirling sort of kind of portfolio of businesses at different stages of their lives. And certainly as we've become bigger and more global, we've become a bit more professional, a bit more like clients as it goes.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, when you think back of, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, you fail fast and, you know, you learn from it and all that. Is there, in your mind, any of those failures that you look back on very fondly?
I mean, honestly, I look back on it all fondly. It's been brilliant. And there's been loads of things that we've done that could have gone better. Sometimes that's M&A, or sometimes that's a business that we've started up, or an invention that we've had that we've not really sort of followed through on or backed properly. There's things where businesses within Iris we've always had this sort of entrepreneurial idea whereby when people have ideas and back them, and some of those have gone on to be incredibly valuable businesses outside of Irish. And I wish we'd taken that more seriously.
Yeah.
But I can't really think of anything that I regret. I think there've been loads of learnings for sure. And I think probably the biggest sort of period of learning was probably halfway in, where We'd won an entrepreneurs competition. We'd won a load of funding. And we decided to really pimp our expansion and be really aggressive and get ahead of client demands. And that led us into lots of markets without lots of client sponsorship. And sure enough, if there's a sort of global economic downturn, you're a bit exposed suddenly. So we found ourselves being in a few markets where, you know, we weren't making money, and that, you know, you do that for a year or two, and that starts to add up to a serious amount of money that can be a bit of a problem. So, you know, that's probably the biggest thing that I felt. And that was less about entrepreneurialism and innovation and all that and excitement. It was more about growing up professionally.
Yeah.
Understanding about actual business. And, you know, we were a business where everything was easy. Everything was growth. Everything was excitement. Never had to worry. So you get this sort of bit in the middle, which is about, yeah, but at some point you do have to make money. You do have to understand about cash, you know, and it was a real, and I found it brilliant. I think it's just a brilliant learning.
Ideally, yes, there's money somewhere. Otherwise, you know, what are you, you're kind of a fancy hobbyist at that point.
Yes.
Speaking of entrepreneurs, let's talk about the podcast a little bit. Entrepreneurs in the Wild. You dig into what makes people tick when they're trying to build something new. When you look at these conversations that you're having, are there common traits amongst your guests that you think give somebody a real edge in the creative industries?
Well, there are some definite common traits, no doubt about it. And there's probably three areas that I just probably want to quickly cover. There are entrepreneurs that become entrepreneurs because of their family setting. So often, someone in their family was an entrepreneur, and that changes how they see the idea of risk and reward, and also attitude to failure and attitude to being unconventional. You know, they're just not so bothered about it. So there is something very interesting about actual entrepreneurs who then go up and start up a business, and did someone in their family do it? So that was a big thing, no doubt. The other thing is that there's quite a lot of accidental entrepreneurs. So people who have an entrepreneurial spirit, but it doesn't get activated until something happens to them. Like they meet someone who is hell-bent on doing the business, and they become part of it, and they become, you know, a key part of that startup. More, they get made redundant, or, you know, just something happens to them that activates this sort of entrepreneurial spirit. But the entrepreneurs that become really, really successful have got a set of things that are really important in any company. And one of those is about resilience. So they're able just to sort of deal with hardship, deal with hard work, put, you know, their lives on a bit of a back burner whilst they follow through on these passions or whatever it is that has driven them. Mm-hmm. They're able to sort of learn. They're able to build really good teams. They have a self-awareness that means that they know what they're really bad at, and they team in a way that allows that to then be successful. So that's another trait that I've seen time after time about the successful kind of teams, that they're just able to do that. Often they've got an idea, they've spotted something that no one else has done anything about. Often they're high passion people, you know, quite often you get this sort of sense of people who are entrepreneurial, and you think energy and charisma and you know, just a personality that sort of, you know, like radiators, and it's often not like that at all. And they're actually introverts, but they're just intelligent, and they're just seen something, and they're makers, they're hands-on. And but so there's a whole set of traits that you just see time after time in these sorts of people. And I just think that, and I actually went into the series thinking, shouldn't everybody be more entrepreneurial? And I sort of realized that actually no. It's about getting the balance right. And in your company, you need these people who are self-directed, who are okay with breaking rules, or okay with, you know, making it up as they go along, and okay with making a few mistakes. But you need probably 75% of the organization around them that like that sort of stuff, but are not entrepreneurial. They are much more kind of able to follow the rules, to organizationally and operationalize some of this sort of wacky stuff that has never been seen before, and find a way of making these things happen in a way that is
profitable. So it's about getting the balance right, but it's about making sure that both sides of this equation like one another and respect one another and know what their roles are within that process.
That's a fascinating answer. I mean, I feel that, you know, over the past, I won't just say the internet era, you know, of the past 30-ish years or whatever it is, probably a bit before that, but it feels like, you know, we've had a couple of back-to-back generations where being an entrepreneur was this hugely celebrated thing. It was the thing that everybody should be. Everybody should go out and do their own thing. And, you know, where I'm from, it was, you know, well, that Bill Gates, he really did some wonders. You know, you should go and do that. And you go, well, okay, cool. But, you know, I'm not Bill Gates. You know, that's a kind of a one in a billion shot there. You know, could I be, you know, the guy down the street from Bill Gates, who I'm sure did pretty well too. We just don't know him on the, you know, cover of Time magazine or something. And, you know, here you are. Well, no, everybody shouldn't. And I love that answer because it feels all too often we're kind of enabling a lot of people who maybe aren't built for that.
Yeah. And honestly, I think there's going to be a backlash, a cultural backlash against entrepreneurs because a lot of the celebrity entrepreneurs are now like running America or something.
Yeah. And there's that.
And they're dabbling in things that they don't really understand because they're not within the entrepreneurial realm. They're different. So that they're doing things and saying things of that, and they don't realize the impact of them.
Yeah.
First of all, they don't have the permission to do it. And secondly, they don't have the skills, the training, the experience as either. So I think cut society, there will be some kind of backlash against entrepreneurs with a sort of capital E. And I think that'll be a shame, really, because I think being an entrepreneur can be very low level. It can be pursuit of your own ideas and your own dreams. And it doesn't have to be, you know, mega wealth afloat. You know, it doesn't have to be all these sorts of power movers.
And so tied to the ego kind of a thing.
It is. And so I think there will be a kind of resetting of what it is to be entrepreneurial as a result of some of the things that are going on in the world at large.
Yeah, I can think of one in particular right now for sure.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's a listener, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, Max.
I'm sure he is. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he is. I have this next question I have to ask. You rode across the Mediterranean to raise 30,000 pounds. That's quite the feat. As someone, I love boats. I don't swim. I love larger boats that I don't have to row, that you just kind of like, you know, passively start the motor and go. But that's a long ways to go.
I've got to say larger boats are better. And I've got to say that 30,000 just isn't enough. So
well, you would know.
No, I mean, rowing is really good on a lake or on a nice river somewhere, you know, maybe Henley or something.
Yeah.
But on the sea, it really is not a good idea because everything is about the sea. The seas tells you what you're doing and how fast you can go and what direction you're going in. There's very little you can do about it. So I would not, I'm not in a rush to do it again and I would not recommend it. But I'm glad that we raised money. And it was actually for one of my friends who unfortunately died. So it was very much in his honor that we did it. You know, there was certainly nothing I'd ever intended to do. And it has taken me a couple of years to get over it. You know, it's only now I'm thinking a bit more positively about it, but it was pretty traumatic.
Wait, because most of us aren't going to go and do this, especially now that you've said not to, what sort of lessons do you have from it, you know, in terms of resilience, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way back into the entrepreneurial topic. And I think as an entrepreneur and someone with entrepreneurial spirit, I like challenges and tests. Mm-hmm. I like learning new things. And I have a attitude, which is who says you can't? How hard can it be? So, you know, I had to learn how to do it. I had to learn how to navigate at sea. I had to learn about seasick, you know, lots of important things. And when it came down to it was about just keep going. Just stay as positive as you can and keep going. That was where the rubber hits the road, yeah, in terms of a parallel between it going rowing in the ocean and being an entrepreneur in what envisages.
I'm sorry. Last question. When thinking of, you know, obviously we're at Advertising Week Europe, we're in day two of three. The topic of, you know, everyone's mind right now is AI. What are your feelings on AI? Are you using it? Do you hate it? Do you love it?
I mean, everyone's using it and we've been using it for ages. People are getting more tuned into it and more aware of it and more concerned about it. I would just be more concerned about what human is and originality and innovation and things that are not that. I think as our sector generally latches onto trends readily.
Yeah.
Absorbed by the new readily. And of course, AI is going to be important, but so was outsourcing or offshoring and so's CRM. And, you know, there's lots of things a bit like this that have been lower key. I think it's important now. And this is why I think the entrepreneurial spirit idea is a big one and a good one, because it's about having a mindset and a personality which says, okay, we will use this to make us more effective and efficient and allow us to scale more effectively and do things that we didn't used to be able to do. But we are going to concentrate on what makes us different to clients, and we're going to concentrate on what value we can bring to clients. And the things that their clients can't do for themselves because they've not thought of it, or it's a problem that they can't even see yet, or it's an idea that you know does need to be a disruption in their space. You're just not going to have an AI that does that. So I think our industry needs to concentrate on what it does best and what is special about our industry, and that is much more about human.
Fantastic note to end on. Well, I'm going to give you the opportunity to pitch one of two things or both. I mean, you're a podcaster now, so this should be right up your alley. If someone wanted to find out more about you or Iris or I guess it's probably the best, or the podcast, where should they go?
Well, obviously LinkedIn, the Iris website or Spotify. You can get all the Entrepreneurs in the Wild, their programs. See Spotify. I mean, we're planning a new series and we're looking at, I think it's Jeopardy is what we're going to look at. And I think it's inspired by your last question around AI technology and all these things. And what should we be thinking about when we're faced by potentially an existential threat like that? And I've got this sort of sense of participation, well, participate or perish. And I want to get really understand Jeopardy and how clients and brand marketeers see Jeopardy in this new era. Because I think that's exciting. And I think that ought to be a role that, you know, agencies or agent provocateurs needs to be playing in terms of offering clients business advice around what's around the corner.
Well, I look forward to it when it launches. And in the meantime, I will be listening to Entrepreneurs in the Wild. Ian, thanks so much for stopping by. This has been great.
Thanks for having me. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to AW360. For more podcasts like this one, be sure to check out Advertising Week's ever-growing roster of podcasts for the advertising, marketing, and technology industries, including The Trustmakers, our podcast with the Edelman Trust Institute, now in its fourth season. You'll find all of Advertising Week's podcasts at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts. Thanks for listening.